Cerebral amyloid angiopathy associated with inflammation is an increasingly recognized condition characterized by an inflammatory response to the vascular deposits of B amyloid within the brain that are the hallmark of cerebral amyloid angiopathy. I'm Carmen Lave Jenkins, Managing Editor of the International Journal of Stroke, and I spoke to Dr. Hugh Marcus, who is a senior author along with other authors, Siobhan Kelly and first author Andre Korovic, sought to summarise the clinical features, imaging appearances and available data on outcome and treatment responses using information derived from a systematic review of pathologically proven cases of cerebral amyloid angiopathy associated with inflammation.
Hello, I'm Hugh Marcus. I'm Professor of Stroke Medicine at the University of Cambridge.
With this review on cerebral amyloid angiopathy, what exactly were you looking at?
We wanted to bring together all the information on what is a relatively rare but increasingly recognised disease called cerebral amyloid angiopathy associated with inflammation. This is different from the normal cerebral amyloid angiopathy we see, which presents with hemorrhage. These patients present with an inflammatory response to the amyloid in the vessel wall and can present with a rather different presentation of symptoms.
So I notice in the paper that you say that it's quite a rare condition, but that it seems to be growing. Is that your experience, or do you think that it's just been underdiagnosed?
I think it's been underdiagnosed. It's like many of these conditions, when you first see a case, you think, I haven't seen a case like this before, and then subsequently you see a few more similar cases, and that's certainly been my experience. We now see a few cases every year, but it is still a rare condition.
Just going back to the review, how did you define the parameters of your review search? What exactly were you looking at to give you the data that you've then collated?
We wanted to identify all published cases of cerebral amyloid angiopathy with inflammation, but we made the distinction that we would only take pathologically published cases. This is because one quite often sees possible cases where there are imaging appearances that may represent the disease. But to be sure that we were really talking about the disease itself, we took cases in which there had been pathological confirmation of the diagnosis on brain biopsy.
So what were the clinical features then of pathologically proven cases of cerebral amyloid angiopathy associated with inflammation?
Well, patients can present in quite a variety of different ways. So first of all, looking at the time course, about a quarter of patients presented acutely with symptoms over about 2 days, and just under 20% presented subacutely. But the most common time course of presentation was chronic, with symptoms coming on over 30 days, and this was the case in 61% of individuals. If one looks at it another way and says, were these symptoms multifocal, affecting multiple different parts of the brain, or unifocal, about 44% were multifocal, about 10% were unifocal, and about 20% of individuals had what we would call an encephalopathic presentation. If one looks at it a third way, just looking at the particular types of symptoms, the major symptoms that people had, about half of individuals presented with cognitive decline, so this was the most common presentation. About a third had seizures. 27% had encephalopathy. Of course, this could also include seizures. And then focal neurological signs such as motor weakness and aphasia were not as common. Respectively, they were in 17% and 14%. So it's usually a global cognitive decline that you see, but there is a whole variety of different appearances or different presentations.
And so what about the imaging appearances? What were the results for that?
So the imaging is key to diagnosis, and you will see abnormalities, particularly on MRI, although you can see them on CT too. And we present a case in the article which shows typical imaging appearances with low signal on CT and high signal in the white matter on MRI. And typically these are supposed to occur in the occipital cortex, but we found that actually imaging abnormalities were present in multiple different brain regions. So they certainly could occur in the occipital cortex, but they could also occur in the parietal cortex and also frontal cortex as well, or frontal lobes as well. The other key thing on imaging appearances is that because these patients have underlying amyloid angiopathy, they often have microbleeds. So about 80% of individuals had microbleeds, which you can see best on gradient echo or susceptibility-weighted sequences. So this is a useful pointer, and you must include this sort of imaging in the MR sequences you use. The last feature that some or many patients had was some evidence of contrast enhancement, where you get gadolinium contrast on during the MRI scan.
So what is the available data then on clinical outcome?
Well, this is very difficult really to evaluate properly. We have to remember that we did take quite a highly selected group because they'd all been chosen to have a biopsy. But there's no doubt that some patients do get better from this disease. So if we look at the patients in whom we did have outcome data, about 22% were alive and asymptomatic. 31% were dead, although some had died from other reasons. 31% were alive and had mild disability, and 16% were alive and had moderate disability. So there does seem to be quite a broad spectrum of outcomes. What we really don't know is what effect treatment has on these outcomes. So we tend to conventionally treat patients with steroids or immunosuppressive agents such as cyclophosphamide. And it does look as if some patients do appear to improve, and we assume this is due to the treatment that we're giving them, but we don't really know how much of an effect this treatment has, and also which treatment approach is most useful for these patients. Should we treat them with steroids, or should we give them immunosuppressives early on, and how aggressive should the immunosuppressive agents be?
So, well then, what do you predict is needed in the future to manage this condition? Where is it going to go clinically, and what do you think research will look like?
Well, first of all, we need to be better at diagnosing it without having to perform a biopsy. So biopsy is obviously quite invasive, and to do this, I think we need much more data from clinical series, and there have been attempts to try and identify non-invasive diagnostic criteria, and we've included a table from one of those papers in our review. So that's one area we need to look further. The second is we need to try and identify what's actually causing the disease, and there has been some interesting data suggesting that you can detect anti-amyloid antibodies in the CSF, and this was in one paper, and again we cover this in our review. If one could develop diagnostic techniques, for example, on the CSF, that would be extremely exciting and very useful. And then lastly, we need data on treatment of the disease. And in the end, we really need data from clinical trials. These would be quite challenging to perform because the disease is rare. And I think it would take international collaborations to have any chance to be able to recruit enough patients to answer whether, for example, we need one immunosuppressive regimen is better than another.
You've been listening to a podcast interview with Dr. Hugh Marcus from the University of Cambridge and Carmen Nave Jenkins, Managing Editor of the International Journal of Stroke. The International Journal of Stroke is the flagship publication of the World Stroke Organization. Please consider becoming a member. And did you know that many stroke societies around the world now have an opt-in option for the World Stroke Organization membership?